Good morning, Boker Tov. My name is Reuven Brand, and I am privileged to be here as a guest of Marna. I am honored to be a member of the ARC board and someone who, as almost everyone here remembers, because I've been here before, knows that this is something that I am passionate and very proud to be associated with and supportive of your work as members of the team here at the ARC. And Marna invited me to share a few minutes of Jewish learning, of Torah study. We've done this in the past in different frameworks, but now, at this point in time and in space, you look around, you're in this space, it's extremely timely to focus on what's happening in Jewish time. Jewish time often mimics and follows, I don't know what they're talking about over there, but it must be very important. So we'll leave them be. Oh, good. That is very important. It follows the Torah reading. And right now, the Torah reading that we're sharing every Saturday morning in the synagogue and during the week at periodic periods, times, we're talking about construction. We're talking about the construction of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle. And we're right now, literally this week, reflecting on the conclusion of the construction. So several weeks ago, there were plans. There was a vision for what the space would need to look like. And interestingly, there were changes in the biblical version. God told Moses one thing, and then Moses told God, we're going to do it a different way, which is apparently how construction works. But now, in this week's Torah portion, in the portion of Vayakhel, when they're coming to celebrate the construction, Vayakhel Moshe, Moshe gathered all the people together. And I bet it was very much a gathering like this. People looked around at each other. Some of them were familiar faces. Some of them were less familiar. Because everybody was doing their own thing. 12 tribes. Everybody had different spots in the community. But they gathered together. And I think there are two reflections that we should lean into and think about when we consider the construction of the tabernacle and therefore, by extension, the construction of this new building. The first is that the Torah is a divine document. And that means there is nothing extraneous, nothing superfluous, nothing repetitive in this book. And it's interesting that both the prescription of what they were commanded that it should look like and the description of what it was are both cataloged in the Torah. We spent two long portions, two full Saturday readings describing what they should do, how they should construct it, what the clothing of the uniforms of the servicemen should look like, all the rooms, all the furniture. Those are the portions, the Torah portions called Teruma and Tetzaveh. And yet, it is noteworthy that when they do construct the tabernacle in the end, it doesn't just say, and they did it. Which, if it would have been me, would have sufficed to do that. But it doesn't do that. Today is Yom Chamishi, today is Thursday. So in 2 days' time, on Saturday morning, people are going to gather together and they're going to stand in the synagogue Saturday morning and they're going to hear all of the things that were enumerated 2 and 3 weeks ago are going to be reiterated again. But this time, not what they planned to do, but what they did. Vayasu kol chacham lev, all the wise people, all these insightful craftsmen who needed to do woodworking and metalworking. You saw the guy with his wires over there before. And all kinds of specialty types of construction. They all did their stuff. They made cloth and they made a beautiful tent. That's what it describes. Then it describes, after all the material for the tent, they made the beams. Then after the beams, it describes how they made the furniture. So one piece of furniture was called the Aron, the Ark. Then the next piece of furniture, it's called the Shulchan, the table, which represents the kitchen that's being constructed right behind us. All these things, all these pieces of furniture, it enumerates them one by one. Why is that necessary? So I think one way to just, on a simple level, appreciate that is that the Almighty wanted us to understand that when you take on a project of such magnitude, of such import, when you succeed in creating the reality of that vision, you should take a moment to recognize that accomplishment. It's true. It would have sufficed from a biblical, technical narrative to say, and they did it, check, and then it moved on to the next story. But to realize what it must have meant for these Jews who had been emancipated from Egypt by God to build a home for God, to build a Mishkan, how they had to fashion all of these pieces of furniture. They didn't have any training. They didn't have any experience. But they were devoted. That became their cause. So I wonder if God is making sure that each one of them realizes what you did was important. And you should take a minute, take a Torah portion, take 2 weeks on Saturday morning to reflect on that. Because a person needs to appreciate that sense of accomplishment. The construction of the Mishkan has many deep, mystical meanings. Many things I don't understand. It's way beyond my comprehension. But on the simple level, to be able to create a space for Jews to come together in the desert, to create that spiritual home for the whole community, for everybody to be welcome, that was going to exist as a model for eternity. It was a continuation of the way the whole community assembled at Sinai. That was huge. And so perhaps God didn't want just that there should be, you did it, shkoyach, nice. We'll bring the donors in, everybody will nod, and then you'll go back. No, he wanted us to focus on each and every step of accomplishment. And I think that's something special. This is my first time walking into this building. As I'm driving here, I'm thinking, Mamish, it's like a Shehech Yanu moment. What an amazing contribution. So to take just a moment to appreciate that somebody actually was able to finish the design, and someone finished the construction, and someone finished the furniture, and that the chairs, all the little things that went into putting together this edifice, this Mishkan, this place of communal gathering and spirituality, which we'll talk about in 1 second, I think that's the first message. Just to take a moment to realize we did something. God gave us a job. The Yichuli Truma, go out and fundraise. And Ribbono Shel Olam said, now get everybody together and say, good job. You did a great job. That's the first thing. But there's a second thing. And that is that there are many parallels between the construction of the tabernacle, the Mishkan, and the creation of the world. A lot of the terminology which is used in the description, in the Chumash, of the construction reminds us of the same way that God fashioned, so to speak, the world, the earth, all of creation. He asked us to fashion the Mishkan, which is why tomorrow night, when we celebrate, when we herald the beginning of the Sabbath, of Shabbos, the Shabbos is patterned very much after the creation of the world, of course. God rests on the seventh day, but it's also related to the Mishkan. All the things that were done in constructing the tabernacle are not done on the Sabbath. Those are the categories of work that we don't do. There are many, many parallels between the two. And one of these important parallels, I think, is bringing us back to the stage that we're in right now as we transition as an art community into a new building. And that is the difference, or the important reminder of form and function. There is a beautiful form in this room that we're sitting in. It's an extraordinary accomplishment. The Mishkan was a Maisa Choshev. It was an architectural and an aesthetic wonder, the tabernacle. It was amazing. But that form wasn't just a form. It had a function. It had a purpose. When God instructed the Jewish people to build the Mishkan, to build this edifice, this tent, this building, he said, "Va'asu li mikdash, build for me a tabernacle." V'shachanti b'socham, and I will dwell among them. Meaning, yes, there's a form, there's a building, but that building has a purpose, it has a function, it has a why. A lot of the things that go into construction like this are about what. What do the tables need to be made out of? What types of materials are used? What screens? And where do they go? All the what questions. And then, of course, you have the how. How are they going to assemble all this material? They're going to get everybody to donate. People had to bring gold and silver, all kinds of specialty items, stones. People donated dyes, cloth, wool, all kinds of stuff. So look what had to be put together. So they had a how. They had a campaign. The capital campaign, it was a huge thing. They had people donating and volunteering. But all of the what and all of the how, all of this form is for a purpose, is for a function, is for a why. We see this in the construction of the world. When God opened the Torah, you would have expected that God would have led with the letter Aleph. One. The Ribbono Shel Olam, the mass of the universe, is all oneness. Aleph. Echad. One. There's only one. At the end of the time, at the end of the day, at the beginning of everything, everything was one and everything will be one. It's Echad. So when you open the Chumash, you see, it doesn't open with the letter Aleph. What's the first letter in the Chumash? Bet. So why is it open with a bet? I would expect it should open with an olive. So there are many ways to think about this question. But perhaps one important way for us to think about this question is exactly this point that we want to focus on and highlight. There is a classic commentator, an expositor of the Chumash, and this commentator is known as an acronym called Rashi. Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki lived in the 11th century. And Rashi is a commentary. It's printed on the bottom of most of the Chumashim that you'll find. Happens to be this is just the Chumash. But on the bottom, you'll find this classic commentary. It's such a fundamental commentary that you can't really study the Chumash itself traditionally without studying Rashi. You know, it's like, I don't know, going out in the morning without a shirt on. Like, it doesn't work, at least in my line of work. So Rashi has some of his own original insights, but oftentimes it's a compilation of teaching from sages of thousands of years ago. Ancient, ancient wisdom. And Rashi, right at the beginning of the Torah, makes a comment. He asks a question without asking the question. But we understand from what he says, the implied question. Rashi wants to know, why does it start with the letter Bet? So he says that the letter Bet is based, it's the beginning of another kind of word. It's bin, bishvil, for a purpose. B-racious. It's like a contraction of bishvil for the purpose of racious, of something that was primary. So what is that? The function of the world? Bishvil Yisrael, for the Jewish people who are meant to bring the world to its ultimate purpose. And we're called racious. Bishvil HaTorah, for the sake of divine knowledge that could permeate the world. And Rashi goes on to quote different interpretations. But what Rashi is saying is that when God created the world, it wasn't just form that he created. He created it with a goal, with a function, with a why. There's a guy, Simon Sinek, he's a, I don't know, a few million views on his TED Talk, and he has a few million people bought his book. He's a guy who talks about this idea, begin with why. So the Mishkan, the tabernacle, was constructed with a why. You ask a person, why did they construct the Mishkan? So the simple answer in the text is, so that this should be a place where godliness should be palpable in the world. It's also a place where people would come together. Later, when they built it as a permanent structure in Jerusalem, it was a place where all Jews came 3 times a year. Everybody was welcome over there. Everyone. It was a place for people to express their service and dedication to godliness. People felt closer to God, and they brought themselves closer to God with sacrifices. It was a place for God's presence to be felt. There are a lot of different whys. But the same way that when God created the world, it started with why, it started with a bet, bishvil, for a purpose, it's the same thing when they built the Mishkan. When they built the Mishkan, there was a why. There was a clear mandate. There was a function. People knew, why are we doing this? And so when we come to Parashas Vayakhel, when we actually construct this building, when we come together in this brand new space and we're beginning to utilize it, we have to remember, why is this built in the first place? And sometimes, even in a space that's as holy as the temple, people can lose their way and they forget the why. You know, even when they had a temple, there were periods where people didn't respect the space. There were even Jewish kings who brought idolatrous icons into the temple. It's terrible. But that's because it was just a form. They had lost the why. So when you lose the why, the what isn't that significant anymore. It's easy in the day-to-day to get stuck in the minutiae of whatever the tasks are that we have at hand. Even in a space that's as holy as the temple, as the tabernacle, as the Mishkan. So what happens when you have the inauguration of something, the beginning of something? It's a great opportunity to come back and begin with why. To remind ourselves, why do we have this Mishkan? Why do we have this tabernacle? Why do we have this world? Why do we have Judaism? You know, if someone were to ask you, and it's a very important question, you have to be able to answer this question, otherwise you're going to vote with your feet. If someone were to ask you, why do we have Judaism in the world? Why do we have observance? Why do we have practices? Why do we have the things that we do? So unless you can answer that why, you're not going to bother. There's got to be a why. So some would say, was that a hand or just a stretch? That would have been good. I wasn't going to put anybody on the spot there, Mr. Shapiro. Some would say, you know why? Because Judaism is very good. It's like the marshmallow test. Some of you have heard of the Michelle marshmallow test. They give a little kid one marshmallow, and then they tell him, we'll come back in whatever, 10 minutes, and if you can resist eating that one marshmallow, we'll give you 2 marshmallows. So it's true, Judaism definitely helps with restraint on instant gratification so that we lead a more noble life. But if that's really it, maybe some of us just want to eat the one marshmallow and gives a diet. Right? Like, maybe I don't care about the 2 marshmallows. Some of you will say, you know why? We need to have Judaism. We need to have this way of bringing godliness into the world because every time we do something special, something meaningful, something spiritual, we get like a little, like in the old Super Mario game, you get a little coin, bing. So you come at the end when you're 100 years old, when a person's, you know, sitting on their deathbed, 97 and a half, they think, ah, now I have a big bag of spiritual gold coins. It's going to be great. I'm going to cash it in tomorrow. Which is true, and it's very nice. But maybe that's not the best motivation, or at least it's not the strongest motivation when that's a long way off and it's very hard to feel that. But if what Judaism, of course, among many, many other whys, and the fact is, The ultimate why is because this is what we're commanded. Kasher Tziva, that's what we were commanded, what we're expected to do, to live up to the standard. But if the ultimate why is that through the practice that we have, the set of practices, we bring godliness into the world, V'shachanti b'socham, that place, the tabernacle, was a place where people were living beyond the constraints of their physical existence. They were living beyond. They were touching something that was transcendent. And that's what Judaism really provides. I think that's the most powerful why. It's not because your soul will be mended after 100 years, which is, of course, true and important. But it's not for later, it's for right now. That when you see a tzaddik, you see somebody who's really in tune with their spiritual identity, they're living in such a wonderful space right now that their whole existence is elevated. So when you have a structure like a Mishkan, it's a vehicle for that why. That when you interact with people who come through this door, who I don't know, this is one of the world's, of course, great mysteries. Why is it that God allows poverty? The Talmud says, the sages talked about this and they struggled with this. Why is it that God allows people to come into the world who don't have the same emotional and psychological capacity that those of us sitting in this room have? We don't know why. These are deep mysteries. We don't understand these things. But what it does mean is that the Rebbe Shlomo gives all of us the opportunity to assist those people. And when we do that, we're v'shachanti v'socham. We become the embodiment of godliness in the world. The why of the Mishkan was for people to bring godliness in the world. I imagine what it must have been. Could you imagine if you were to come from some far-off small village and once a year you would come to the temple and you would see throngs of people and you would have, maybe we don't relate practically to animal sacrifice today, and when the we'll come back, we'll have a different spiritual sensitivity, but just the idea of having that spiritual pilgrimage and feeling something special, and you feel like you're part of something greater and that your life matters in a unique way to God, not even to anybody else. That's what's being created in this room. That's what's being created in this building. It's a Mishkan. It's a place of the service of God where meaning happens. V'shachanti v'socham. It's created for a purpose. And even though on a day-to-day when we're dealing with paperwork, and God bless everyone, especially those who I've met before who are in the accounting chevra, God bless you. It's amazing what they do. They add numbers. It's a crazy thing. It's amazing. I have so much respect for that. I don't understand it, but I respect it. So maybe the people in the accounting, maybe, I hope they gave you a window at least. Do you have a window? The people who live in accounting, they're generally in the basement somewhere. The accounting people generally don't see the why. The accounting people, they generally see the screen. Or the people who are, wherever you are, but today you remember, why am I doing this? Because this place is a place of godliness. This is a place where the spirit of the Almighty, of something transcendent, is going to happen. And even if in the day-to-day it's hard to feel that, that's the ultimate why. That's why this structure exists. And so you should take a sense of pride, a reminder, a reorientation of direction to say, you know what? Of course, I'm here for a purpose. You could have been doing something else, but you're here for a purpose. But now I'm realizing this new beginning is an opportunity to recommit myself to appreciating the purpose. Appreciating the purpose. And so what I'll leave you with, because I'm over time as usual, is think about a practice. In the Mishkan, there were jobs, there were practices that became ritualized. And if you look, there's a guy by the name of Tal Ben Shachar. He wrote a bunch of books on happiness. He taught in Harvard. He talks about there are certain things that bring us happiness and meaning and joy. If we want to stick with them, we need to ritualize them. Which is funny, because ritualizing is like a word that many of us, you know, were taught, especially in my generation, you have to hate that word. It's like very stodgy and stale from the 1930s. But he says, ironically, if you want to add meaning, let's say you really appreciate going for a walk. He says you have to ritualize go for a walk. You're going to go for a walk at this time every week in this context, you're going to go for a walk. Because otherwise, what's going to happen? You're going to get busy. You're never going to go for a walk. And you're going to turn around after 6 months. You're like, you know what? I never even went for the walk that I love. So you have to ritualize it. So this place has a purpose. This is a Mishkan. It is a place of sanctity. So maybe each one of you who is serving in this place, it's worth thinking about what's the practice that you can institute in your day of work that will remind you of the why. And it's going to be different from person to person. But the same way that in the tabernacle, if you don't have a way of remembering the why, it's easy to just become accustomed to it. So what could that be? Maybe it could be you're going to pick a particular mezuzah that when you walk in here every day, whether it's your office or a different office, you're going to see that mezuzah, which is a little scroll that reminds you of the presence of God in this place, and you're going to kiss that mezuzah on your way in. And that's going to be your little reminder of your why. Why it is that you work here. Why it is that you serve the community. Why it is that you're embracing the Jewish community. Maybe it's going to be you'll have something on your desk. You put something on your desk that reminds you the why.
Because some. I'm just going to suggest.
Oh, maybe. Maybe we could. We have to ask.
We had a creative activity earlier.
Oh, we did. Amazing.
To remind them. That
exactly. 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 So whatever it's going to be, maybe it's that you have a Tehillim that you keep in your desk and you recite one psalm every day in English or in Hebrew, but some practice that keeps you rooted in the why. Because it's easier now when everybody's together and the building is brand new and people are focused on that bigger mission. It's harder on the day-to-day. So I would just say the same way that in the practice of the Mishkan, they had certain things to do and those actions were meant to remind them of the why of the presence of God. I would say potentially the same thing for all of us. So I'll just summarize what I wanted to reflect on and share with you. Number one, the Torah portion this week says, take pride in all the accomplishments. Every piece of furniture in the Mishkan, every light fixture in this building should take a great amount of pride. It was not easy during a transition period somewhere in Peterson. You know, everybody was uprooted, everybody was moving. It was like in the desert. You were going from one place to the next place. So that wasn't easy. You should take pride. Vayakel, go through each thing and be like, wow, what a nice door frame. I guarantee you, two committees sat for 6 hours to decide about that door frame. God bless them, right? I'm sure.
It was the door hardware that really took
the most. It was the hardware. You imagine Betzala, the guy ran a whole building project for the Jewish people as a whole. You imagine such a thing? Oof. So number one, take pride. And the Torah says everything that was accomplished should be a source of pride. That's number one. Number two, that the building, the form follows a function. There's a why. There's a base. There's a reason. And that why is ultimately what animates everything that happens in this building. And then number three, as a takeaway, is to find something that we can practice to remind us of the why. The same way that we had services and practices in the Mishkan that were meant to keep people's focus on that why, on the presence of God, whatever we can do to remind ourselves to stay in that spiritual space as much as we can, hopefully it will maintain some element of the feeling of newness, of the freshness, of the beginning, of the ultimate why, of why we have this gift that we are entrusted with from the community as this space called the Ark, and what we can do to pay it forward to the community. So best wishes for everyone for Hatzlacha and Bracha in the coming days and years.